I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hey guys, we're bringing you some fun chat about One Matter, even though football is struggling. It's Wednesday the 23rd of September. I'm Kate Mason.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Andy Brassel.
They said don't make it too doomish.
Well, the world's not helped you out with that, has it?
So. No, it bloody hasn't. How are you guys doing, though?
I'm all right. I'm chipper. I'm feeling all right. You seem very...
I'm worried about the future of football, basically.
Kate's upset because somebody told her to come to the pub because Ian Wright was going to be there, and then she got there and Ian Wright wasn't there, and the whole thing was a ruse. And now your ego's bruised, isn't it? That's what's going on here.
That's privileged information you've just used.
That would make you feel less than optimistic about the future.
It would, wouldn't it? You'd all expect him to meet Ian Wright. See, most other members of this team have met Ian Wright. Some, even people I people.
Some
I know
of us were born in the same hospital as him.
Were you really?
Yeah, I was.
Oh my goodness.
So a friend of mine who works for Acast as well, she's met him enough to know him fairly well. And all I want out of life is to be mates with Ian Wright. He's my football dad. I've never met him. Everyone else has. So I share your pain.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm glad about that. It feels like you're just rubbing it in a bit, Brassel.
If you want, I can give you a short list of the other famous people to have been born in Lewisham Hospital.
How do you know this? It's quite weird. I don't know anyone who's been born in Peterborough.
Don't you?
Or maybe no one famous ever has.
Yeah. Well, I tell you who wasn't born in Peterborough. Maxie Priest, because he was born in Lewisham Hospital. Bross, because they were born in Lewisham Hospital.
I was going to say both of them. Obviously both of them. Famously twins, that's how that works.
Oh my goodness me. Okay, cool. Do you know who lots of people are born in the same hospital as you?
No, I was born in Barking Hospital, so write in? Don't. Absolutely do not. We will not scrape that barrel.
I think we might. Write in. There's a new email, show@footballramble.com.
Yes.
Yeah.
So do write in. Tell Jim who he was born next to.
Yeah, please
that
do.
That would be incredibly creepy. I also feel as though we might be slightly like giving away, you know, this is a bit mother's maiden name, isn't it? Like security right. questions on your bank account. All right. So there was some Carabao Cup action last night. There was also not some Carabao Cup action, but we'll get on to that. Man U got their season. Actually, they got their season off to a win ultimately. But I think we should start with Newport County 3, Watford 1.
Yeah.
Because that's a bit of good news, isn't it?
They love the Cups, don't they?
They've got to the fourth round of the League Cup for the first time in their 108-year history.
Very impressive.
That's lovely. That's a lovely story.
Yeah, I mean, for Watford, it's got to just be like, oh, come on. Can we not have a break from this relentless drudgery?
Do you not think, though, Watford having come into the Championship season...
Come into the Championship. That is a very generous way of putting it.
Like, we're here! they've not conceded a goal in the first two games. I don't think they even slightly care about this.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Just getting it out of the way.
Ah, okay.
I'm not meaning to diminish
10 changes.
Newport's
would give
achievements
you that impression,
or anything
it?
Like that. But Newport have had their cup fun. They're used to cup fun,
yeah.
Aren't they?
Yeah, they are sort of...
So you think Watford were just being supportive of that?
Yeah, on brand.
Normally you love the FA Cup. Why not have a little run in the League Cup as well?
Yeah,
good
that's
of them,
nice.
Actually.
Okay, all right then. Yeah, fair enough. 10 changes suggest that perhaps it wasn't the main target of Watford's season. But equally, there was a lot of lively stuff going on in this and a couple of nice goals and a bit of elbow to the head at the end and a red card. So,
oh, was there? I've not watched it.
All right. There we go. It was lively.
In case that isn't clear.
Newport's second goal was fantastic. Lovely, lovely finish from the edge of the box. So, yeah, I mean, I wonder, actually, we probably are going to get a lot of teams fielding, let's be honest, particularly weakened sides in the Cups this season because of the fixture congestion. And obviously they're looking at staying in the league because it's going to be as important as, if not more important than ever, given the challenges that football's going to face this season. So we might actually see a lot of Cup runs from smaller sides, do you think? It might actually make it a bit interesting, a bit novel.
Well, I don't know, but I guess this comes on to the old, like, small clubs kind of struggling thing. So I guess that's why I was so happy to see a League Two side do well and put out a proper side and play well, because yeah, a lot of other teams look as though they're... Yeah, we'll come on to that. Yes, Manchester United also won 3-0 at Luton. Debut yeah. for Dean Henderson.
It was interesting, actually. I was watching the highlights of this earlier today. And when Dean Henderson makes his save in the second half, and I think Martin Tyler goes, that's Dean Henderson's first save as the first team goalkeeper of Manchester United. And you think, wow, this is being built into a whole
narrative
thing. Yeah. I mean, obviously, the fact that it was reasonably one way, certainly in terms of Luton's chances, I thought Luton actually played quite well, and
yeah,
you know, the two goals at the end are a little bit harsh on them. But it is interesting, isn't it, how much this De Gea-Henderson thing is being built up, and Henderson's new contract, which is obviously paying him a lot of money and at least infers some sort of medium-term investment in him, if not just protecting the asset.
Mm.
I think it's quite interesting that everything Dean Henderson does, we've talked about the focus on De Gea, there's an enormous amount of pressure on Henderson to get it right in the limited opportunities
yeah.
before. Because when Sergio Romero plays, it's, oh, right, De Gea's not in goal today.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
where
yeah.
it's, oh, it's Henderson. It's Henderson.
Well, it's because
it's
English,
a moment for
it?
Him. It's a moment for Manchester United. It's a moment for England.
Yeah, and it's just going to run and run and run, isn't it? But I think he's at the advantage there, though, isn't he? Because I think we've seen time and time again that De Gea's got mistakes in him. And it's been the narrative around him for a good few years now. Whereas, obviously, Dean Henderson was excellent for Sheffield United. But I think the neutrals are thinking, surely there's an easy fix to this De Gea problem. Like, from within Man United, you're probably looking at how difficult it would be to move De Gea on for the wages he's on and blah, 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 blah. All the stuff that you... All the books you have to mentally balance when you're sort of looking at your own club.
Yes.
But from outside, you're just like, well, surely Henderson is the answer to that problem. And I feel like there's less pressure on him than there is on De Gea.
Yeah, know? There is. But it's interesting, isn't it, how there's this sort of almost football societal push for Henderson.
Mm.
And funnily enough, in Spain, who've always been a bit meh about De Gea, now for the first time, there's this push for De Gea. It was really interesting hearing after the internationals, particularly after the Germany-Spain game, in which De Gea played very, very well.
And this is not partly because the back of his Kepa.
Possibly. But I think it was interesting to see Luis Enrique come out after that and say, yes, you can see, we're lucky to have two. He did say two. Such great goalkeepers. And, you know, we're so lucky to have him, and he's playing brilliantly.
Is this not a Spanish export angle? Like, don't you diss our players.
Yeah, like we can criticise him, but you can't criticise him.
Exactly.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, fair enough. Anyway, it's good to see Dean Henderson. I guess what the reason for the narrative as well is because this is actually a competing for the number one jersey situation, isn't it? It's not a...
And not just the number one jersey of Manchester United.
Yeah,
that's correct. Why it's such an overarching theme. But I guess it must be funny, if you're listening to this as Juan Mati, you thought, hang about.
Excuse me.
You've gone about Spaniards at Manchester United for ages, and you're not talking about, I actually played and I actually scored.
I survived Mourinho coming in.
And I give money to charity.
Chelsea.
No, you make an excellent point. Should we give Juan Mata a bit of love?
Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised actually that Mata hasn't moved on, because he's such a good player. And even as a player coming to the twilight of his career, I don't know, maybe he's just comfortable and happy at Man United and happy to play that role. But you think he could get first team football somewhere else, right? Presumably.
Although I do find it quite amusing that he's got this amazing, untouchable public image, you know, semi-retired, left-footed playmaker in his 30s. He does a lot for charity. But he's not ripping off his club by hanging around, is he?
No.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Invest in better PR, Mesut. Yeah, that's my advice. Yeah.
Is it a question of scale? I don't know. Like, feeling like he's been treated badly?
Did you see Mesut Ozil's post a little while ago where he posted a picture of him praying, which is obviously, his faith is really, really important to him, and that's a reasonable
kit,
thing.
Wasn't it?
In a Real Madrid kit, yeah. It's very pointed, very pointed.
He's not wearing the Real Madrid kit this week. It's an old photo, right?
Quite.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, who can say?
That's the next step, isn't it?
Like, padding around his house in a Real Madrid kit.
Look, what are you
thinking
his own
of the
time.
Old times?
Verde Bremen scarf.
Photoshopping a whole crowd behind him. It's very weird behaviour, Mesut. Like, can you just have used an old photo? No, I wanted it to be from now.
But people only take the social media hints they want to take.
Yeah,
I mean, I do remember with Dani Ceballos last season, there was that picture of him stood next to his telly in a Betis shirt at home. And, like, you know, people were using the same picture to link him with a loan move to Sevilla.
Yeah, it's the way social media sort of transfer stories have gone, isn't it? I remember we had an email a long time ago about somebody who had worked in a hotel where Santi Cazorla was staying for whatever reason.
Mm.
And he brought room service up to him. And I think he brought his PlayStation with him, and he was playing FIFA or Pro Evo, whichever it was. And he was in a full Villarreal kit. And this is as he was while he was an Arsenal player, but like this was effectively his pajamas. And it's like, oh, Santi Cazorla is the most adorable footballer ever. But Dani Ceballos does something comparable, but he's mad Dani Ceballos. So everyone's sort of like thinking it's a pointed thing. It's interesting, isn't it? Sometimes footballers are just being people, and they're not. There's not an agenda to what they're doing.
Maybe footballers like wear, you know, old T-shirts they got from work to go to bed in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And maybe Paul Pogba just tweeted that thing about, you know, the questioning face when Mourinho was getting sacked, you know.
You know what? When it comes by accident.
maybe. Like when Jolyon Lescott sat on his phone and it tweeted a picture of his fancy car when he was getting loads of criticism.
These things happen
to us, to all of us. We've all been there.
I constantly tweet by accident. I mean,
we've all got fat fingers.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
The bottom line is, I would like to believe, though, Pogba doesn't wear to bed. You know that half and half Manchester United St Etienne shirt that his mum wore when him and Florentin were playing each other in the Europa League.
That's adorable.
Is it? Is that not along the same sort of lines as like a half and half scarf? Oh,
but when your mum, it's the mother of two players on each team.
Yeah.
That's fair enough.
Very sweet,
but it was a shirt. I mean, I know a little bit about how sort of parent-child relationships work. And if I was... I think Paul, from memory, because I think the half of the St Etienne shirt you had was the one with the badge on.
Oof!
If I was
that's
Paul,
privileging,
I'd be
isn't it?
I'd be looking at that and thinking
that's better.
So why have you got that half for him?
Yeah,
Why couldn't you have done it top to bottom?
Oh,
it,
no, it's still, my God, it still wouldn't work. No, no. Oh, my God.
Just wear what you normally wear, Mum. It's becoming a nightmare.
A half and half scarf as well to like balance it. Oh,
yeah, God. But you don't want to encourage those.
No, I really don't. Yeah,
this is more of a minefield than you think, isn't it?
Just try not to, you know, breed footballers and play for different teams. That would be my takeaway from this.
Exactly.
The other upset, I guess, of the night, West Brom knocked out by Brentford. So final score 2-2, Brentford win on penalties. But it doesn't feel like these two teams were both championship teams not so very long ago.
But it was really West Brom Rezzies against Brentford Rezzies, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it was quite, to me, not that recognisable Brentford side.
Mm.
Well, I saw Marcus Force scored one of the goals and he started, and he was on loan at Wimbledon last season. So.
All right. So a quality individual.
Unbelievable,
yeah,
mate.
Excellent.
Well, Marcus Force. Always good to have Marcus Force in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Wonderful. Absolutely. But he did a really good job, actually, scoring that many goals for a team who weren't particularly good. So I'd like to see him get some games at Brentford this season. But really, it was about the Emiliano Marcondes overhead kick, wasn't it?
Yeah. There's something really sad about an overhead kick in a
stadium when
empty
in
stadium.
It.
Yeah, but still. We are going to get this thing, aren't we, of all these sort of ghost goals almost that happen in empty stadiums that will probably not make the highlight reels.
Yeah. That whole question about does it have as much impact if there's no one there?
You know, Jim, it feels like you diminished some of my greatest goals at Power League when you said that. I find that very upsetting. Kate, can we move on?
I'm sorry. Mate. Do you not play? I suppose you prefer to play without supporters because you're a bit of a confidence player, but lower confidence perhaps when people are...
Well, like Mesut and Juan, I'm very much semi-retired these days.
But no one's worried that you're stealing a living, Brussels. Right.
Well, not on the football pitch anyway.
Now, then the other game we wanted to talk about is that was the game between West Ham 5, Hull 1. Now, look, the interesting point about this is, so obviously Tottenham was supposed to play Leighton Orient at their ground, and that was called off 2 hours before, a little bit. It was one of those real ones of like, everyone knows this is about to happen, but for example, on Sky, you of course can't report things until they're literally nailed down and everyone knows it's not going to happen. And the reason it was called off really is because Tottenham volunteered to pay for the testing of the Leighton Orient. A slightly different setup in place that I don't, I'm afraid, fully understand. Maybe you guys do, but there's the sort of testing less regularly. And basically, it seems as though some decision was made about how, you know, how often the tests are taking place, and it's fine to have fewer tests. However, the outcome was a lot of the Leighton Orient players tested positive for coronavirus, and ultimately the game has been postponed. But who the hell knows how Tottenham are going to play a game like that, given they're already supposed to be playing 4 games this week. Now,
isn't this the issue? Before we even get to the actual health aspect of it, in terms of the schedule, the one thing we should have learnt, or the football authority should have learnt from the shutdown, is there is simply too much football.
Correct. Yeah.
I mean, whatever the good bits of the League Cup this week, why is this competition even happening?
That's the obvious one, isn't it? Anyone who's particularly passionate about the League Cup might disagree. That was a very sneering tone you just used. Do you know what I mean?
James.
It's not like we're kind of denigrating a club or a league, is it? Do you know what I mean? I didn't think, does anyone really love it that much? Everyone's involved in the FA Cup anyway. So it's not that there's not a cup competition, but it does seem the obvious one to rest for a season, doesn't it?
I mean,
presumably it's got complications with, I don't know, does it affect potentially affect Europa League qualification somehow. I don't know. It's all they're all kind of mingled together in various ways, aren't they? But it can all be unmingled.
The point I suppose I was going to go on to make is that Leighton Orient did that. Hull also offered the opportunity to test and they didn't take it. So effectively what it feels like is happening is that Leighton Orient, if you like, did the right thing and said, okay, yeah, absolutely, we'll be tested. And then Hull thought, maybe we don't want to be tested. So what we don't know is whether those guys, we don't know if they had COVID at the moment when they're playing. What we do know is that David Moyes, Issa Diop and Josh Cullen also had in the round of the normal testing, had tested positive for COVID.
I mean,
an hour and a half they received that before they were due to play. And it just seems like the reason I'm worried about football at the moment and was in a bit of a, you know, malaise earlier. Yes. It's just basically, I do, like you're saying about this cup competition, intermingling between the leagues, given all the different testing situations that are going on and the different lives that people in League Two live as opposed to Premier League.
And the idea that you can say yes or no to it.
Is unbelievable. Yeah. How can this continue? I just don't see how
I
it
mean,
can.
I mean, what more could Spurs have done? Oh, sorry, of West Ham have done. If they've offered the test and Hull have said, it's fascinating that they've said no. It's really, really interesting.
But why are they allowed to say no?
Yeah, well, quite, exactly.
Because the system is different depending on what league you're in. And if that is the case, then how can you play people from different leagues?
But if you've got Leighton Orient and Tottenham and West Ham versus Hull in the same competition, how can it not be consistent in the same competition?
Yeah. I appreciate that it's quite expensive, particularly for clubs that are a little bit cash-strapped. But where the Premier League clubs are offering it, it's fascinating to not say. And actually, a lot of the talk before the game was that if it would be postponed, it would be the fixture would go to Spurs, wouldn't it? But it seems there's now talk that it will be replayed. So,
but then how?
It's
fairer, the knock-on is just unbelievable.
It's a nightmare in terms of fixtures.
I mean, you know, good for them to have a night off, I suppose, from my partisan perspective, but...
I guess, you know, we are living in an unprecedented time where there are going to be a multitude of challenges faced to keep football running as close to normality as possible. This is just one of them popping up.
Are we living in a time where you can't have strict protocols for a competition to even be played? I mean, that's the bottom line, isn't it? I find that just outrageous. While we are tearing a strip off the Carabao Cup, we should say for balance, Sebastian Haller probably loves it.
Yeah.
Other energy drinks are available. Wasn't sure where you're going with that, but yes.
Andre Yarmolenko doesn't believe that. So let's stick up for his point of view.
Yeah,
as well.
Let's talk about the football. So effectively, you know, West Ham did well to win so convincingly in amongst brilliant. All of this Celtic situation.
Yeah, and I guess if there's any value in the League Cup this season, it is the fact that teams haven't had a proper pre-season. So this is going to be a way, we're talking about maybe the competition shouldn't be happening, but if you're talking about actual game time for players to get up to speed, particularly peripheral players, it's maybe quite useful.
Yeah, it's good to see Allaire and Yarmolenko play so well, because they're going to be players that Moyes needs to really sort of, you know, contribute this season. Because obviously West Ham lost against Arsenal the other day. I don't want to talk about Arsenal too much, but I think West Ham were the better side. They actually played really, really well.
They did play well.
A little bit blunt up front, but you know they're
looking
organized. Good nick.
A little bit blunt up front, and Allaire and Yarmolenko banged a couple in the League Cup. What are you saying?
Getting their shooting boots on. They'd lost their shooting boots. They left them somewhere else.
Yeah, I think it's interesting though. The fact that when you look at the front half of that West Ham team that played against Hull, that is a lot of money.
You look
at those two, you look at Lanzini, you look at Felipe Anderson, who I still can't get my head around the fact he plays for West Ham. This guy who wasn't an automatic first 11 pick for Lazio, and they thought, right, we'll pay 40 million euros for him.
They paid a lot for him, didn't they? He was sold as if he had a bigger reputation than he perhaps did. Do you know what I mean? There was a lot of fanfare when it seemed like a bit of a coup when West Ham got him. It's like, oh, we've got this amazing player people don't really know that much about. It's like, you what?
Yeah.
It's like Arsenal getting Arsene Wenger from, Japan. Not quite as good. Potentially. But yeah, I agree. I was so excited when all those signings were made as excited as I can be about, you know, West Ham signings. But it did seem cool like they were going to come to the Premier League and change the game for them.
And we were talking earlier about the first season Felipe Anderson had, which was the season before last, which seems like so long ago, because it was, where he was fantastic. And I have friends who support West Ham who were saying they'd not felt this way about a player since Dimitri Payet was there. And it seemed fair enough, because he was consistently doing a lot of good stuff, and then it just seemed to drop off last season. And I really like him. He's a player that's so entertaining to watch. And they, you know, they love players like that at West Ham. They're like a sort of flair player. And it's really disappointing to see him sort of like just stutter a little bit. And I hope we see more of the Felipe Anderson that arrived in East London than the one we saw last season.
Yeah, me too. All right then, guys, let's get to a break. After this, we're heading to Loftus Road, Hotspur Way, and Estonia.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
All right, guys, welcome back to the Football Ramble. It's me, Jim, and Andy today. You were here yesterday, you two.
Yeah, we were.
We never went home.
That's a bit weird.
All night Carabao Cup party.
What?
That's how we stayed awake. Anything drink.
Exactly.
What have you been plotting?
That's why we're particularly wired.
Oh, my goodness. I feel like a substitute teacher. All right, let's talk about some emails, shall we? We've got the shiny new email address show@footballramble.com, and you have been writing in and sending us lots of lovely emails, so thank you. Angie Man Joshi says, hi gang, how long before we can see actual freelancing footballers in the game, given the current climate and also the many possible injuries players are going to have this season? Surely one game contracts will suit many players.
Well, it's happened before, isn't it? We all remember Roy Essendon getting a gig off CFAX and scoring a goal for Wickham Wanderers in there. Was it the FA Cup? I think it was, wasn't it?
It was, away at Leicester.
Yeah.
Last minute winner away at Leicester.
Brilliant, brilliantly famous story. And he's called Roy Essendon, which is just cool, isn't it?
Yes.
Like, just a brilliant name. So it's happened before. You know, it might happen. You know, Watford seems to do it with managers, don't they, Germany?
Sort yeah,
of like
good
temp
point.
Contracts rather
That's
than...
not a bad idea for Watford.
I think for insurance purposes, particularly in this day and age, it's quite difficult. In terms of one-year contracts, like that idea of a footballing freelancer, someone who just, you know, in their mid-20s signs a succession of short-term contracts for a top club, I could actually imagine that. And I've been able to imagine that for a while, because I think, especially in a time like this, and I think it is, when you're talking about an idea like this, all about the times, I think that you're going to have a lot of clubs that aren't going to want to overcommit, are they? Mm. You know, do you want to offer someone a four-year deal, not knowing how, or a three-year deal, a free agent, a three- or four-year deal, not knowing how deep the pot is? So I can see that. Like, from my personal perspective, if I had a footballing career, I would love to sign a succession of one-year contracts and like play for 10 different clubs. Mm. I would love that.
But the thing is, I mean, this obviously, the email is a little bit of a joke, but there are structures in place to stop exactly this happening. We've seen, you know, Roman Abramovich has been in the news recently because of deals he's had with particular players that didn't play for Chelsea through various different companies.
When TPO was all the rage.
Yeah, when it was perfectly legal when he was doing it, it should make clear. Also, obviously, Kia Jurabchian had that issue with Carlos Tevez in the past, where the Premier League rules didn't allow sort of part ownership by an agent. And so agents will try and do this. Mm. Like, they would love that to be the case. They are pushing for that to be the case. So let's leave this alone, because it'd give them even more power if that was the
agents
case.
Agents get even more power. And also, like you're saying, I suppose Andy's coming in on the part of clubs who might be struggling financially. But equally, you know, any contract that's quite short puts the power in the employer's hands, right?
Not necessarily.
Unless you're like...
If you're the player and you smash it, you're going to be fielding all sorts of offers at the end of the year.
But even then, if you
have... Jorge Mendes is, which is ideal for you.
Master of your own destiny.
Yeah, but even if...
Jorge Mendes is going to be master of your own destiny.
But even if you had lots of... But even if you had a long contract, that would be the case. You'd be even more valuable in that case, no?
More valuable as a player, as an individual player, rather than to the club.
You'd be more, you'd be able to be sold for more, right? Because the value of the deal that you're on is so much greater. You'd have to negotiate harder to get the player out of that contract, wouldn't you?
Sure, but I think if you're the player, I mean, admittedly, you don't get the long-term security. But on the other hand, you can, I think, charge more for a shorter deal.
Mm.
And then when you get to the end of it, the world's your oyster if you've played well.
Basic economics with a football ramble.
Very basic economics.
Basic, underlined, italicised and in bold.
Guys, we're just, breaking out to the new Football Ramble presents feed. I think this has got legs. Jim, I know you're quite into a few football rules.
Yeah.
Rule change ideas.
Yeah, my Community Shield idea has got some mixed reactions on Twitter. They've inspired some more. So Geordie Hoken, and I apologise if I've got your name wrong there, Geordie, or pronounced it wrong. He's been in touch. He said, I've had this idea for a couple of years now, and I reckon it's time to be taken apart by the Football Ramble crew.
At least he's acknowledged it's going to be taken apart.
He knows what's going to happen. Here goes. Award a point for each half which you win. For instance, let's say Liverpool versus Arsenal ends 3-2, but the halftime score was 1-0 to Arsenal. This would result in Liverpool taking the 3 points, but Arsenal being awarded a point as well because they won the first half.
Right.
However, if Liverpool had won both halves, they would get 4 points, for instance, if the halftime score had been 1-0. There are no points being awarded for halftime draws. If it ends in a draw, both sides will still earn 1 point, except if Team A won the first half and Team B won the second half, so they would both get 2 points. In my opinion, this would give the game another strategic edge and would stop teams parking the bus after the first half if they've gone up in that half. It will also lead to more exciting ends to first halves. Now, a lot of terrible things have been done in the name of attacking football, haven't they? Like the golden goal and the silver goal, for example. But I actually think, this would obviously never be implemented, but as an idea, I think it's quite interesting, because in theory it would encourage more attacking football, which probably definitely benefits the status quo, but I think whatever you do, that's going to be the case.
So wait, you get
Is
it 3 points for... So you get your 3 points for a win.
But if you were winning in the first
half
as well, you get 4 points.
That's safe, in the words of
Jim Bowen. Yeah. That's safe. You've got your speed, but...
So if you've won the first half, like in this example...
Yeah.
You get 1 point and the other lot get 3 points.
No, yes. So, yeah, absolutely that.
But
so
if you
up in the first half and you lose the game, you get a point for winning the first half. And whoever beats you gets 3 points.
Yeah, I don't know, Jim. I mean, or...
I think it'd be interesting. Geordie. It'd be interesting if anyone has got the has got the time to figure out what that would have done to the league table last season. Then please do it and get
please
in touch.
But there are no points offered for the second half, because it says
if
Liverpool had won both halves, they would get 4 points. So if the halftime score was 1-0, they get a point for the first half, and then they get their 3 points.
So you're
win.
Right, yeah. If they won each half, that should
because
be 5 points.
For me, the main benefit of this would
is
be
in the second.
Exactly. Yeah. If a team's like 5-0 up at half time, and the other team comes out and gets one in the second half, while the other team's like sort of
got to win the second half, lads. You just got to. It's 7-0, like in that Hull game. You got to go out there and win this.
Exactly. I mean, that would be deeply annoying to me. The fact that when a manager goes, "Well, we won the second half," he would actually be right.
That
would infuriate me.
More permutations. It's becoming a lot more like American sport. Let's just lean into it.
I feel like that would be right your cup of tea, Russell. You want quarters in football, don't you, really, with your NBA love?
Yeah, rolling subs, all of that.
Yeah.
I'm actually quite into rolling
subs. Two goals if you score from outside the box.
Oh, now we're talking. It's going to happen. Another Football Ramble Presents series, the future of football as invented by us.
Jörg Albert gets wheeled out of retirement despite the fact he's in his 50s. Hulk becomes the most important player in the world at 34.
Some people would
yeah,
say.
Yeah, I'm down with that, obviously.
Obviously you are. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for emailing in. That is some lovely stuff. And yeah, I think there's actually, when I first read it, Geordie, I thought it was a bit crap, to be honest. But now I think it's got legs. So thanks very much indeed.
Just because something's crap, it doesn't mean it doesn't have legs. Okay?
Yeah, that's a great
point. If you've learned anything from modern society, you should have learned that.
Right, let's have a little chat now about what Les Ferdinand has been saying. The wonderful Les Ferdinand, I think we can all agree, yeah. About taking the knee. So basically QPR, so he's director of football at QPR, and in their game on Friday against Coventry, they decided not to take the knee and then got a bit of a battering for it on the old usual places. And he came out and said yesterday, they released a statement, QPR, saying a number of pretty salient points, I think, but mainly about this point that really, in some ways, Les Ferdinand and seemingly the guys at QPR generally think doing something symbolic like that can also just be an alternative to action, and he doesn't want that to be the case.
Completely. I mean, the points Les Ferdinand made are actually really, really good, and I haven't really seen a backlash to those points. Quite often you see that happen, but he's effectively saying it's got to the point where it's been happening for so long that it's now sort of become tokenism, and people are doing it, as you've alluded to there, Kate, rather than actually taking action. And he's pointed to QPR's record in terms of, of just encouraging diversity and actually, you know, taking action and what a diverse club they are and a lot of the stuff they do in the community. And I think it's really good. This is part of the conversation that needs to happen. The conversation, as we've said before, it can't really die down, can it? It's always going to be a changing landscape in terms of keeping the fight against discrimination in the public consciousness, keeping it moving so it doesn't just become wallpaper, basically, because it isn't going away. It's always going to represent a changing set of challenges. And I think it's just fantastic the way that Les Ferdinand has made his point. He's made it really, really clearly. And the comparison he made to the clap for carers situation was
really
perfect
good.
Because people actually felt like clapping every Thursday was getting a bit, again, it was becoming tokenism. It was
and it
becoming
was interesting
just an empty gesture.
How like people were like getting shamed by their neighbours
for
not joining in.
Yeah, exactly.
And stuff.
Because I don't know about you guys, but the first time that Clap for Carers thing happened, and I suppose it's more likely that it would be this way in if you live in a big city, because there's more people around, so you can get more of a weight of noise, whereas if it's like just you in a hamlet, then probably you're just clapping on your own. But I thought it was really quite emotional.
Yeah, a friend of mine is a nurse, and she was on her way to her shift when it happened, and she said she had tears in her eyes, because obviously the first time it happened it was a really beautiful emotional thing, but by the end of it it had become a thing people felt obligated to do. And Les Ferdinand is making that point, and it's, you know,
It's a signal that something needs to be done, but it's not actually something being done.
Absolutely.
Great
point.
That's the point that Les Ferdinand is making. I thought the interesting quote from him was, recently I took the decision not to do any more interviews on racism on football because the debate was going round in circles. And he's absolutely right. It shouldn't be down to black players or black leaders in football, of which there are unfortunately very few, or black people in society in general, to talk about it for sort of, you know, public sport, really, should it? It shouldn't just be that. It should be. The fact is that actually doing something about major issues is boring. It's monotonous. It's insistent. It's unglamorous.
It's not something you're rewarded for, is it?
Exactly. And it's not something that happens overnight. It's a continuous process. And I think that's what he's trying to bring to mind.
Yeah, and you hear about what it's like at QPR, and not just diversity from a kind of race perspective, but gender as well. I've heard of female coaches working under Les Ferdinand, and it just seems like they're kind of living the values, if that doesn't sound too naff to say.
No, not at all.
Out loud. But yeah, so that's a really interesting way, the way that they've taken back, seized control of the narrative in a really nice way. Little glance over at Tottenham, shall we? I'm sorry, I didn't put this in, guys. It's not like we haven't talked about Tottenham enough. But anyway, Alex Morgan's just been presented at Tottenham, and there is a North London derby on Saturday in the FA Cup, last year's FA Cup, which is still happening, quarterfinals.
That makes my head hurt.
My brain is blown. I don't think she's going to be playing in it from the sounds of things. She hasn't played in over a year. She had a baby 4 months ago.
Get her on for 10 minutes a sub, score a goal, do the cup of tea celebration.
Yeah. I think yes. so. Trigger
it's
everybody.
It's got to be done.
I mean, is she going to do it every time now?
But
you think?
If there's any game you're going to do it in, it's got to be the North London derby. I mean, come on.
I mean, it's not a stretch to expect Alex Moore going to score a lot of goals for Spurs, is it? So I would love it if she does that tea drinking celebration every time.
Well, just I suppose if you're doing it against Arsenal, it's got to be a latte, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You've
got, you've got to go to the corner flag, mind the whole barista thing.
I wasn't sure what you meant because I was like, I don't know, a latte, you normally hold it in like a bigger mug, don't you? So you could be drinking a pint.
She'll have thought about it.
Yeah, I think
she's
will.
Ahead of the game, is Alex?
She is ahead of the game. So yeah, that'd be wicked. I don't know if she'll feature in that, but she did the... it was quite fun watching her press conference stuff and like, oh, obviously Spurs is a big club I know all about. I don't know. Do we believe that?
I think so, yeah, of course. She's a professional footballer.
Yeah, okay.
She'd have heard of you guys.
Well, it's a, you know, Spurs are a team that are building a women's club, a club that are building a women's team.
Yeah, because they're not that good is the point I'm making as a women's side.
Yeah.
It's new.
Obviously only their second season in the top flight. But
yeah, yeah.
On the other hand, it's a big name in football. And as well, I think Spurs as a club, have made a big effort to put the women's team front and centre in that first season. They've made an effort to get them played
in the stadium,
the main stadium.
Awesome. Yeah,
to actually get people in. All of that's really important. And it is kind of like, I guess they're in a similar position. And maybe the WSL to an extent is in the position. If you think of the early years of the Premier League, when you're not just, obviously you want to get in the best players you can, but you think of like when Hullet arrived or Zola arrived, and Zola had, you know, an Indian summer that no one could have imagined. But it's kind of that, isn't it? The fact that Alex Morgan is still a great player, but it's about having those big names to sort of make an impact. And almost, it's not as if what she does on the pitch is insignificant. Of course it isn't insignificant, but just the fact that she's come is absolutely enormous. And I think, you know, you can look at it and say, well, because of the current situation with US soccer, you know, we don't know how long she's going to be here. We don't know how long Rose Lavelle's going to be here. But, you know, in the short term, does it matter? It's about planting a flag at the moment, isn't it?
What's cool is having seen also her say that, you know, the reason she's come is because she realised, she, much like Gareth Bale probably, she realised that she needed to get some regular game time. And the thing about the States at the moment is it's not stable, their league. In the women's game, everything was stable. And as we've discussed earlier, that there wasn't such a lot of chaos going on. But it's quite exciting to me that England is the place that people are able to find stability at this point in the women's game. So, yeah, I'm quite excited to see. And I'm just impressed at how, like, you know, they do all those warm-up stretch videos and, like, all those cutaways. And she looks incredibly bloody flexible for someone who's just basically just given birth. It's pretty impressive. Yes, I promised we'd get to Estonia.
Yes.
Which I don't know when the football ramble last went there, but what did you guys see this little video of an Estonian Premier League game? The ball went out of play. Kickoff's just happened. The ball goes out of play. Whistle's blown. 13 seconds in, on comes a sub.
Yeah.
Absolutely baffling.
Well, it was because the player subbed off was 16 years old, wasn't he? So there is a rule.
He did look like a child.
Yeah, there's a rule
Laurie Supp. Yeah.
So there's a rule where they have to start with two homegrown players. So they started with him because a lot of the players have tested positive for coronavirus, so they had to stay away. So he managed to fill that homegrown quota, so they just took him on straight away because he's a literal boy.
I mean, this has been done in the EFL Trophy before, isn't it? Formerly known as the Checker Trade, etc., etc. Well, because you've got to play X amount of players from the previous Saturday and X amount of senior players who played a certain percentage of your games. So you'd start the game with those players and then just sub them 10 minutes in.
Then hope no one gets hurt.
But partly, I think, 13 seconds. Surely the kid could have...
Yeah, it's a bit demoralising, isn't it?
13 minutes? 2 minutes? 3 minutes. Anything Look, more than
depends
that.
Depends how he reacts seconds. Now, doesn't it? If he's going around the dressing room, like with the U team going,
Big
I'm a first team player. Why are you even talking to me? Don't even look at me.
Probably. I mean, it's a little bit like when Marko Arnautovic, the Austrian player. Well, of course, he played in the Premier League for a bit, didn't he, Marko Arnautovic?
Yeah.
When he was a bit younger, he was part of the Inter squad. The Inter squad.
Yeah.
Who won the Champions League final in 2010, and he had Champions League winner 2010 embroidered on his boots. And when he arrived at Werder Bremen, Torsten Frings, very experienced player, of course, very, very decorated player, had a look at his boots and said,
"Oh God,
what's this?" And he went, "It's something you've not won."
Oh. Is that a little
something
bit...
you've not won, Marco?
Is that a little bit...
Well, exactly.
Referees... having, you know, Klattenberg having the Champions League...
That's not that bad.
Tattooed onto his... Where was it? Nowhere naughty, I just, yeah. just couldn't remember.
Strange implication.
I thought you were going to talk about Mossy on his...
On his boots.
On his boots, yeah.
Oh, I think that's quite exciting.
I think they, you know, offer it for a pound extra for most online retailers.
Yeah.
You're probably sitting there, you know, had a couple of glasses of wine while you're ordering your new boots, and you think, yeah, why not?
Jordan Pickford having Get the Rave On will always be the ultimate for me.
Yes, it will.
Wonderful.
Oh, bless him. Yeah. Oh, I don't know, actually, is that the reaction? Yeah. Bless him, Jordan Pickford. I'm fine with that. I back that chat. All right, guys, that's it from us for today. Make sure to look after yourselves, both you, Andy and Jim, and you lovely Ramble listeners. Say goodbye.
Me and Jim will be looking after each other during our next Carabao Cup marathon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
Thank you.
They're not going anywhere, these two. They're not going anywhere.
Room for the long haul.
Sitting in the studio like weirdos. Bye, Jim.
Bye.
On tomorrow, it is Marcus, Luke and Fish. Are you not staying here? You conned me. I'll be back soon. Catch you next time.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. Why One Question Time is a Stack production.